Hey, what's good, everyone? Ghazali O'Reilly here. New episode of Gomo Look Podcast. And on this one, we just want to sit down with you, have a heart-to-heart conversation, no BS involved about, yeah, do you want another attempt to making a real change? As you probably know, you probably heard it in the hallways, like water cooler conversation, is that the UN is gearing up for another round of trying to reinvigorate itself, reinvigorate multilateralism. I'm talking about the Summit of the Future. And for that event in September 2024, it is going to be at the high level week. So that's at the opening of the General Assembly year. And yeah, during that high level week, it wants to be able to present a outcome document, like a strong declaration. And in this case, it's called a Pact of the Future.
This is the Gomaluku Podcast.
So up until this point, for a lot of people, Summit of the Future and an outcome document called the Pact of the Future, like, sounds super, super, super interesting so far. But it's, if you zoom out, if you go to this 30,000 feet view and not just like see the landscape, but also like and the included temporal factor. So time-wise, you see it as another of those initiatives to get people excited again about the sustainable development goals and obviously multilateralism. If you go back, New Social Contract was one initiative. For those OGs of the podcast, you probably know that a couple of years ago during COVID, we did this New Social Contract conversation with Professor James Anaya and the President of the General Assembly, Maria Fernanda Espinosa Garcés, about new social contracts. Multilateralism was on a decline, and how do we, breathe new life into multilateralism? If you just Google it, UN 2.0 is another one that they launched recently, and the UN also created a board for effective multilateralism. And those are just like the initiatives, the programs of action, the ideas that I have as of late, but I can go on and on and on about all these attempts that they've made, but definitely shouldn't. Also, like, full disclosure, I am not a huge fan of the Sustainable Development Goals, but I'll promise you I'll save my quarrels with the SDGs for another episode of Oprah. So anyway, let's move on. Now, when it comes to the future, as humanity, we have a lot of wishes. We have a lot of things that we would like to see. And it's just a bit of a challenge when the UN becomes the mouthpiece of humanity, when the UN puts itself in this position to try to determine, like, what should the future be, and what should humanity want, and what should humanity wish for. And the thing is that the UN becomes, when the UN gets involved, it becomes a challenge because politics gets involved. And you and I both agree that when it comes to the future, when it comes to people's desires, wishes, and everything that comes with it, it shouldn't be just about policy. It should be about people, culture, heritage, and ensuring that indigenous peoples are not just heard, but actually are a driving force in shaping the future. Yes, I put it from the perspective of indigenous peoples again, obviously. But here's the thing, I received a zero draft. I went through the zero draft, which is like the initial draft. It's like the first thoughts document. That's right. Hey, this is an idea. What do you think? And the thing is that in this draft, indigenous people's perspectives, participation, wisdom, and rights were overlooked. There were no references to indigenous peoples, indigenous rights, nothing. So I was like, yeah, hold on, not on my watch, like not while I'm still alive, while I'm working on enhanced participation, I'm working on human rights, I'm working on climate change. I have BBNJ, so biodiversity beyond national jurisdiction in my peripherals. I have oceans in the same peripheral, and on the other side, biodiversity in the peripheral. Like, no freaking way that this whole idea that the UN is putting forward in terms of reinvigorating itself, multilateralism, that it is, and particularly in when it comes to future, that is not including indigenous peoples. Not on my watch. So I went through this zero draft, like it had like over like 200 paragraphs. And it is as simple as, you know, you do like command, find feature, put in indigenous, and then see how many hits it get. If it's zero, then you got some work to do. If it's one, then you look at it, and in many cases, it's just preamble paragraph. But in this case, zero, zilch, nada. No references to indigenous people. So I went through the text. I made 5 recommendations. And obviously, like, it's not like, hey, these are my 5 recommendations. And you send it to a member states like, hey, guys, this is what I think. No, I checked it with relatives, indigenous peoples that I've spoken to about this in a certain way, that I know are actually doing the work in a lot of negotiations. So in this case, it's not very, given the short turnaround, I thought it was not very helpful to like to send it to like everyone, but actually I sent it to like a few key people, like, hey, I know you've been talking this, I know you've been like following up on this, like, what do you think? So I checked it with my indigenous relatives, these 5 recommendations, and sent it to member states. So first of all, let me break it down for you, like, why did we do it? Because, so my thought was like, world changing fast, and at this point, if humanity decides not to be inclusive, particularly inclusive of indigenous peoples, you're leaving behind like centuries of wisdom that could help solve some of, not some, but most of our most pressing problems that we are facing as humanity, right? Also, indigenous peoples, and I can say, or I can talk forever and a day about it, stewards of the earth, long before hashtags became a thing, really. Our insights into sustainability, community, resilience, are not just valuable, it's essential. It's essential for the challenge that we face today, and that is all these challenges is from a wide range, from climate change to world peace. So like, that is the spectrum. So it's not just climate change, biodiversity. Oh yeah, indigenous peoples, traditional knowledge, we can use you for that. Absolutely not. It's a much wider reach. It's a much broader spectrum than just people knowing how to plant seeds and knowing how to make trees grow faster. I'm just spitballing here. So if indigenous peoples have a lot of knowledge about climate change, world peace, and all that stuff, how did we slide indigenous peoples into this narrative of a document of with 200-something paragraphs? How did we slip that into that text that's trying to shape the future of, in this case, multilateralism can be read as international cooperation. Now, and obviously this is super fun. I like doing this. So basically, and when I say this is super fun, and this is kind of can sound like very geeky to a lot of people. These are one of the things that I roll up my sleeves and I dive headfirst into something, because, I'll pause a little bit. The thing is, what you need to know, like, it's like when you do provide language, and by language I mean like paragraphs, texts, something that you would like to have included into this big document that states eventually going to negotiate and are going to decide upon. Don't just throw references in there like it's confetti. You know, indigenous peoples here, indigenous peoples there, you know, or be like Oprah. You get indigenous peoples. This paragraph gets indigenous peoples. You get indigenous peoples. Like, no. That's not the way to do it. But you got to like channel your inner ninja in a way. Blending the art of, not art, art and science in a way of negotiations with obviously a little sprinkle, a little bit, a dash of personal brand magic in a way. And I'll explain it in a little bit, because it's making sure that these quote unquote language proposals are strategically linked to the inclusion of indigenous peoples, to like overarching goals and commitments that they have already made. And also showing that without indigenous peoples' participation, without indigenous peoples being included into the text, because if you're not included into the text, you're left out, particularly when it comes to indigenous peoples, because we need to be included into the text. And when we are included into the text, it needs to be within the what we call like normative framework of human rights and the rights of indigenous peoples. Anyway, the thing is that it needs to show that without indigenous peoples' participation, these goals will be like super hard to achieve. So let's get tactical here. Let me explain. Let me give you a pro tip, dare I say, for all you aspiring indigenous leaders out there trying to do this. This is what I did. And this is what I mean, like, this is fun for me. Because I get to steal stuff. By that, I mean you can pull verbatim language, like literal language, quote language, from key documents. So that's what I did. You know, I saw that whole document. I was like, okay, there's not much time to negotiate. So if I want to get something in there and I have to play it through member states, I gotta like make it easier for them to propose that language. So the last thing that I should be doing is go to like, I don't know, like ChatGPT and give it a prompt like, all right, hey, give me a paragraph for a Summit of the Future document that ensures that indigenous peoples are included into the future. And give it to me in UN lingo and hit, send. No, it's not like that. You know, like you really have to like be like, all right, so what are these documents out there that can be helpful? Like, so that's what I did. You know, I used the third committee resolutions. So every year, the General Assembly has several committees, and the third committee, it deals with including human rights. And every year it has the resolution on indigenous peoples. And that is, in many cases, a consensus document. So that's good. You look into the latest human rights and indigenous peoples resolution of the third committee. It's like, all right, so what is helpful? What are some of these paragraphs that we can use to put into the Pact of the Future language? Same thing with the future we want. So that's a Rio Plus 20 outcome document. So it made some references to indigenous peoples. What's in there that we can use to include into the text of this Pact of the Future? And obviously the outcome document of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples. adopted in 2014. However, many of these recommendations are still valid. And also what we know is it's next of kin, in a way, to the Pact of the Future. So because it's a, the World Conference was a high level plenary meeting of the General Assembly. You know, so it's the older brother to what is the Summit of the Pact of the Future. So look into the World Conference Outcome document and see, like, all right, what are some of these elements that we can use for, which is in the same context, we can use for the Pact of the Future. That's great. So that's why I get to steal stuff. So so you look into these documents, particularly agreed language, like, oh yeah, that's good. And then you like canvas it, and then you filter it, shortlist, and then at the end you get a number of paragraphs. Because like, why would you reinvent the wheel when the UN has already acknowledged the importance of Indigenous peoples in all these significant documents? Why would you go to ChatGPT? Or why would you sit down with your colleagues in a workshop for 2 to 3.5 hours trying to like work your way through language that might sound best, and also like it's also depends on the flavor of the day for everyone, if you already have document that you can draw inspiration from or you can draw language from. So that's what I did. Like, we didn't reinvent the wheel. The UN has already acknowledged the importance of Indigenous peoples in all these significant documents. And by using this language, you're not introducing a radical idea. You're just reminding the UN of its own commitments. So it's like saying, hey, remember what you said in 2014? You remember what you said in 2012? Oh yeah, by the way, you remember what you said at the General Assembly Third Committee Resolution last December? Let's actually do it. Let's not reinvent the wheel here. Let's do it. And the added benefit is that all these countries have already accepted these documents. It's agreed language. So if they push back a bit, you can come back again saying like, hey, and this always sounds music to my ears, that it's agreed language. It's part of international law. Like all that, like it's... And mainly, like, when it's part of international law is when you can literally quote paragraphs or articles from the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. When you quote from, ICESCR or ICCPR or the CIR Convention, like, all these, like, that's international law. It's like you quote from there. That's always these opportunities are, like, so amazing. Anyway, let's get into the specifics in terms of like these five recommendations. I will not go like word by word what went in there, but definitely what we did, we spotlighted the unique relationship between Indigenous peoples and our lands, territories, and resources. And, you know, like also telling about the critical role this plays in sustainable development. Like, it doesn't need to be rocket science. Like, this is something that, we've been pushing in many contexts, particularly environmental programs of the UN. And this isn't just about environmental stewardship. It's about recognizing Indigenous peoples' knowledge systems and governance as these things are integral to our collective well-being and future prosperity. And also that the knowledge of Indigenous peoples and our governance systems so are part of the, you know, the building blocks of the future. Like it's part of the, I would even say it's a cement, but okay, well, if you don't want to see cement, building blocks then. So that's what I did. Then what I remember, like, we tackled the importance obviously of Indigenous youth. Summit of the Future, there was like a specific section on youth. So obviously future belongs to the young, and Indigenous youth hold the keys to blending our knowledge, traditional knowledge, as many people call it, with modern innovation. So by advocating for policies and resources that support their well-being and education. We're investing in leaders who can navigate the complexities of the turn of 21st century with wisdom and courage, you know, like that's how I would put it. And that's language that I pulled verbatim from the World Conference outcome document. I think it's OP15, and that was specifically for capacity building for indigenous youth for transfer of knowledge. What we also did was emphasize the need for policy development in consultation with indigenous peoples. And this isn't about being tokenistic. This is not about token participation. It is about co-creation and respect for indigenous sovereignty and self-determination. Full stop. It's about changing the narrative. That's what I'm trying to do, from doing things for indigenous peoples to doing things with indigenous peoples. And I think that is so super, super important that people need to understand. And I've seen it happen in many resolution negotiations, is that we add, when there's a government program or like a UN program, and we add indigenous peoples in it so that indigenous people can benefit from it. And I always put in this caveat in there, or not caveat, not the right word, but when there is a reference to indigenous peoples in there, I always say like, hey, in conjunction with indigenous peoples, or in partnership with indigenous peoples, like something along those lines, because it's we always need to keep in mind the right to self-determination. You know, like it really is something that we always need to be super aware of. So whenever there is something about programs or ideas, initiative, whatever, and you add indigenous peoples, always include in partnership with, because the last thing you want is that external forces or programs or whatever reach into communities and decide what indigenous peoples need to do or not do or say or not say. So that's what I mean with participation and making sure that that these, when the decisions are being made, that they're not doing for indigenous people, but with indigenous peoples. Now, why should I go, or sorry, why should we go through all this trouble? Because it's time. It's about time. It's about time that decision-making tables at the UN become as diverse as the world that we live in. That is super important. Obviously, UN is a club of states, but it needs to know that indigenous peoples aren't just another quote-unquote stakeholder group. We're keepers of centuries-old wisdom. That's crucial for tackling today's global challenges. Climate change, world peace, social equity, whatever you want to call it, like it's super important. Now let me be absolutely clear. I'm not doing this for making the Pact for the Future. I'm not making this for the Pact of the Future to be more inclusive. It's about redefining what success looks like at the UN. It's about ensuring that indigenous leaders aren't just participating, aren't just participants, but are shaping the future alongside everyone else. And by everyone else, I mean member states. And by indigenous leaders, I mean leaders of indigenous peoples, authorities, traditional governments, parliaments, assemblies, representative institutions, those leaders. Because this is about making a tangible impact, about turning aspirations into actions that will resonate across regions. Now, as we gear up for the summit, at least some of us, I have so many things on my plate, but I do recognize that it's game time. It's about holding the line and ensuring that these critical inclusions that I just mentioned aren't just footnotes, but actually are central to the narrative that the UN is trying to create with this Summit of the Future. So if you listen to this and you're like, hey, I'm keen to support these five paragraphs, as being in addition to the 200, I'm keen. If that's the way you think about it, like, then this is your moment to shine, my friend. Let's advocate. It's your moment to shine, to advocate, to push for a future that is going to acknowledges the profound contributions of indigenous peoples. Now, let's get tactical. Let's talk about game plan here. What you can do is keep the conversation alive and kicking. Keep it going. Being these five recommendations, making it so compelling in your advocacy that ignoring indigenous people's voices becomes unthinkable. It's about leveraging every negotiation, every relationship, every ounce of your, here it is, personal brand, to champion this cause. And why do I mean personal brand? Like, let's be honest. Diplomacy and negotiation, particularly in the UN context, it is all about your relationships, how you show up. And so that's what I mean with personal brand, so that you can, because it's, when it comes to relationships, people think about my girlfriend, my boyfriend, or whatever, you're my spouse. So I'm trying to make it understandable for you, or relatable for you, by saying, like, personal brand. So how do people interact with you? How do people feel emotionally when they interact with you, right? So, yeah, so every ounce of your personal brand, use it to champion this cause, right? So basically, you have a very pivotal role to play. So it doesn't matter if you're like a seasoned diplomat, a grassroots activist, or somewhere in between in this whole spectrum, your voice matters 100%. And it is super important to understand that it's time to amplify the call for a truly inclusive future, to inspire, motivate, and most importantly, to act. So again, like, I can't remember who said it, but it's true. Because how did I say it? If it's not us, then who? If it's not now, then when? You know, there's a thing that's what someone said. Like, what I really like, and what I usually use in some of these conversations that go into the same direction, is, and I had this like the other day as well, when we talked about, yeah, next steps. And yeah, some people were like, you know, yeah, we'll deal with that later on. Like that's not short term, that's medium term, or that's not medium term, that's long term. And with some of these things, I'm like, yeah, hold on, it's some things need to be addressed right now, or you need to keep moving. And yeah, I remember saying like, well, we worry about tomorrow. We said that yesterday. You know, to make it clear to people, some things, like, you keep pushing, you keep putting off, you know, like, because you don't want to talk about it. But like, it's something, yeah, deal with it. It's super important to do it. I'm drifting off. So again, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? Like, that narrative, that sentiment. So if you want to make history, you can. Make sure that the Pact for the Future isn't just a document, but a legacy that will honor the richness of our planet. So anyway, don't do it for me, don't do it for indigenous peoples, but do it for the planet, for the future that we all would like to believe in. and that you can be a part of. And again, they framed it in a way that is like somewhat of the future, like there's end all be all, but if this doesn't work, 100%, like they will create something else in the near future to do the same. However, you don't know. But like I said, every document that is universal or like that has consensus agreement and you have language of indigenous peoples in there, it's always good. So even though if it may not, in the off chance that this whole thing does not become a strong document for the future, it's still out there and it's still something you can use for future reference into another document. The UN Declaration, the 20th anniversary of the UN Declaration, for example, I don't know. Or maybe they will come up with some new social contract 2.0 or 3.0 in 20 years. Who knows? So again, it's become part of that movement of making indigenous peoples' participation a standard, a fact. Be part of that. Anyway, thanks so much for listening and hope you, found value in this episode. See ya.